This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
Hi, I'm Greg Eubin, and I really enjoy applying architecture principles to Agile teams, as well as applying Agile principles to architecture.
This is the continuing episode of a series about software architecture with guest Greg Eubin. Okay, cool. So the inward-facing architect pairs with lead developer and discusses design trade-offs. Earlier I said something about, are people still doing class diagrams? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what is your feeling about an architect who's inward facing using class diagrams versus not? Is there a problem happening? Is that the best practice that people follow nowadays still? What's the story?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be using a lot of different diagrams. I have not seen a class diagram used very, very often lately. But mostly sequence diagrams is what I've seen people trying to communicate flow being most important. They'll use code to generate class diagrams, but I haven't seen it actually created. Where I have seen sequence diagrams created from it, and then sometimes they'll generate it from the code, and then compare them. Hey, was what was expected actually coded?
What I've heard is that, and I think it makes complete sense, is that if you are creating diagrams of the code that you haven't written, you're getting into the path of maybe very detailed upfront design. If they're high level and how do I say, fairly empty boxes, then you're creating a high level architecture, which might be fine. But the advice I've heard is just don't invest a lot of time in it, because the rate of change in at the class level is so high that you're going to end up making a lot of effort to maintain your documentation, and that documentation is never as up to date as the code. So it's just not common nowadays. It was common when I got done with college. So I'm in the late 90s or mid to late 90s, but I think it was on its way out by the late 90s.
Yeah, that's right around the time where, yeah, it was coming through. Was it IBM was pushing a bunch of tools, I remember, for that, be able to do all that upfront design. And you know, basically a lot of that was also still waterfall. So it was, you know, do all your big upfront designs and stuff like that. And so build all of those diagrams and then right click, generate code.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And you just touched on like model driven design, where you can build the models ahead of time. And I actually got involved with that in the more mid 2000s, but the scope of it was very model-driven design. Looks like it works well if you keep the scope tight and you don't try to model everything. If you model everything, it gets to be. I've heard stories where it falls under its own weight after a while. But if you keep the scope tight, it's not bad. Like if you're mostly in the case I was working in, we're modeling entities in a database, and so what the model-driven design gave us was code generation for schema creation in the database and code generation for converting from database entities into class objects for the language we're in.
Yeah, and I've always found that challenging from an Agile perspective. Yeah. Right, it's a lot of churn and ceremony to make all those changes and then spit out the Delta code. Sometimes it was just easier to just write a small script and adjust it, right?
And I think one of the things it turns into is it tends to be with model-driven design is what we're talking about now, not just diagramming classes in general, is that it tends to be a two-tier application. So you have your application layer where the code is, and then you have your database. And that's why you shouldn't take it too far. I believe that was all the lessons that we learned from MDD. I know people... There are stories of people at IBM being shocked at how far people have taken it to do the whole really large systems at scales that wasn't intended to be, the system was pretty heavyweight and slow at that point. So I guess with emergent design and model driven design, or even just doing your models at the class level up front is probably the biggest problem, because in the past again, it went back to upright design. We assumed we knew all of the answers and we would write our class. I remember investing a lot of time on class diagrams. And then as I was coding, I was learning new things. I thought, oh, this isn't really the right way to model it at all. And so I'd be back up and I'd spend a lot of hours to days making adjustments to the model and then going back to the code. So it was a strange situation. And now the recommendation is to, if you want class diagrams, generate it from the code. That way it's right. Accurate.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I like the sequence diagrams, more lightweight, and they're more to talk about the flow, which becomes more the harder part of the architecture, is what is the right flow to make this work.
Yeah, I think it's higher level. You're not like tied up in everything, which you would be with a class diagram, and you're modeling the relationships and maybe uncovering communication bottlenecks, things like that.
Yeah.
Ace is an agile consultant who shares space with a coffee shop in order to save on the rent. Meet this hard-boiled agile consultant and follow his adventures on helping his clients become agile no matter the circumstance. Scrum Noir, the project management comic book that teaches you agile, is available on Amazon. Just search for Scrum Noir, Noir. Check out the goodies in the show notes. There we will have links to some of the information that was mentioned in this show. And also you will see how to contact Greg Euben. What are show notes? Show notes are information that zaps into your podcast player when you subscribe to this show. If you downloaded this MP3 from a website, you can go back to the website, and on that page, you will also see the show notes. The series started at episode 257. If you missed that episode, go back to agilethoughts.info, and there'll be a search box there where you can type in any episode number you care to look up. Next episode, more Greg Euben. How do architects support agile teams? I know you've talked a little bit about that, but maybe you want to expand on...
Sure. I do view the architect as being a member of the team, the enterprise architect, being a member of the team as much as possible. Ideally, they'd be supporting maybe a couple of teams that are related, and they're there because, again, they're more outward facing. So they have to build a network of their peers to be able to talk about that. And they're going to turn around. They're going to help the team build or understand those dependencies.
Enterprise architects have a relationship with lots of teams. And what would you say is a warning sign that they don't have a relationship with lots of teams?